Good. Welcome everyone on the ARIS Working Group call. Today in the agenda, we would like to talk a little bit about the data provenance log and the consequences of implementation of this kind of data model into the ecosystem which we are working on. So obviously, reminder about the antitrust policy notice. The link to the meeting page is on chat, so feel free to add yourself to the attendees list. Let's see, do we have anyone new on the call who would like to introduce himself to the community? If so, please speak up. If not, let's move on. So announcements. So obviously IAW next week, there will be a lot of interesting topic as always, for sure. Definitely there will be some of the work which actually we'll talk about today as well, presented during IAW. There will be a lot of interesting aspects from the perspective of the progress on the carry and digital identity from the perspective of the networkless approach. So I really encourage everyone to join and be part of that awesome community. Any other announcements which people would like to share with that group? If not, let's move on to the work updates. Any interesting work updates which anyone would like to share with the group?
Some things going on. ARIS Akapai 072 is ready for release. We'll probably have that out this week. As well, there's been some hard pushing on how the BBS Plus presentation exchange implementation has gone, and that's been good. Couple of bugs fixed in some complex JSON LD credentials, so that's good. All good progress, moving it in the right direction. So those are the main things going on in that area.
Great to hear. Thank you very much. Any other updates? Okay, then let's move on to the main topic of today's meeting, which is data provenance log, or another speaking, microledger. It's a concept which is not new, obviously, as you can imagine, and there was a lot of attempts to build something around that, and we'll see how that actually evolves. And I would like to present the Hume Colossus version of this microledger, which is actually done in collaboration with the Crypto Applied Working Group. We are trying to figure it out how to do the proposal working item for the Crypto Applied Group, how this should be structured, what kind of constraints and why we actually need that. So, maybe starting with like why we call it microledger. I mean, first of all, it's catchy. It's a kind of marketing thing, I would say. What actually is behind this microledger is this authentic data component. So this is the data provenance of any arbitrary data which you could think of. And just to give you an example, identity or identifier and the keys behind that, how they are changing and so on, are very specific narrow use case of this data provenance log. So in that case, as you maybe remember from the carry ecosystem, we call it key event log, which basically gives you the possibility to keep track of the key state change and how that impacts, for example, the identifier itself. So for example, you have a history of the keys, you have a possibility to do the rotation of the key without the losing of the identifier with the cryptographical verifiability of all the objects or all the events which happen on the key, means that as soon as you receive this kind of information, you can verify integrity and authenticity of those information, being sure that this was done exactly by the owner or the controller of that identifier. We pointed out a couple of times that this is one of the biggest problems of the DID space, where when you're receiving the DID document or when you're doing the resolution of the DID document, you have a problem of the verifiability of that DID document. How do you know that this document belongs to that specific identifier? And many of the DID methods do not take care of that at all, and assuming that the resolution mechanism is secure and you don't need to worry about anything and you will get the right one. But obviously, relying on the third party is not the point of having a decentralized ecosystem, where you need to have, again, some kind of centralized mechanism for the resolution mechanism to be able to deal with all those objects up there in the wild without having a possibility to verify that. One of the simplest ideas is to replace the DID document, or not replace, enrich the DID document with this data provenance log in a way that as soon as you receive the DID document, you can cryptographically verify that it belongs to that identifier, and you can verify integrity and authenticity of that object. So going into the much more generic definition of the microledger, which is event transaction log or data provenance log. It's a cryptographically bound to self-certifying identifier, enabling auditable account details of the origin, changes to the details supporting the confidence or validity of the data. And the overall idea behind it, and I will start jump around a little bit just to give you a little bit of the background story of that. So we tried to figure it out how to create a construct which we notice, or it was highlighted by introduction of Kerry, like this key event log, like why we cannot have the key event log or any event log for anything else than just the keys. We could apply that to any generalized version of that data model, like any data, Git version, event sourcing. All that stuff is basically have the similar characteristics, and we would like to have those components of the authentic data in there as well. So when we're speaking about them, and actually maybe I will, before I forget, there is a spec and there is this one. I'll paste that in the chat. Later use. This is a backstory for that, what we build and how we build it. And we're starting with this assumption that whenever we are dealing with any data, if it's identifier, if it's the data of the subject or anything which is floating in the digital space, we are interested about those three characteristics: integrity, authenticity, and veracity. Integrity is basically built up on the simple cryptographical principles that you can verify that this is exactly the thing which we are looking for, like content-based networks, right? Like IPFS, like, or maybe not IPFS, but let's say similar. BitTorrent works on this, on those principles, that you can have built-in integrity. As soon as you know the hash, receiving the content, you can verify that this is exactly the content which you are looking for. So, but the thing is that integrity is not enough. Where we are going with that is that we would like to have the authenticity of that information. So we would like to know not only that it's integral and was not modified, tamper proof, but as well that it's authentic and coming from a specific source. So who created it? Who committed to that information? How this information actually came to existence? So you can verify not only one single event of that information, but the whole provenance log of that information appearing in the ecosystem. But to get to that point, you need to have authenticity in place. And this is where the microledger actually stops, But actually, the whole model goes a little bit beyond that and introduces governance on top of that, where, as we know, even having integrity and authenticity of the information, we cannot have veracity of that information, of the data, because we need to have some kind of human trust into it to verify that actually this, what I see, is true or subjective true, right? So it's all about the reputation who issued it, about the authorized access to it or authorized rights of that. So everything which comes into this bucket of the governance. So the governance sets the rules, sets the reputation, and a lot of people speaking about some kind of trust registries, or you could think of like timestamping authorities, anything which you can't achieve by just simply applying a cryptography on it. You need to have the veracity of the data comes from this ecosystem of which is built around the specific governance. If it's a truly decentralized governance or centralized governance, that's up to the ecosystem. So diving into the details, like how it works and how it looks like, the simplest way is to visualize it based on that picture here. So I intentionally called it Nano Ledger to show how we're going to the level above of that, because this is where we get the integrity. There is nothing else in here but just a block of the data. So the seal, for now, let's assume that this is a payload, which is cryptographically linked to each other, like blockchain kind of thing. But there is nothing, there is no consensus, there is no authenticity of that information. Is basically you can verify that for whatever reason someone linked those things together. And as a base example, you can think of Git. Git is working pretty much based on those principles. It's a Merkle tree, which cryptographically binds some kind of data all together. And then, if we would like to go for the authentic data, so obviously we need to have extra mechanisms for that, which is the only thing which we have so now, or the state of the art is the digital signature. That's the only thing which we can actually use for those purposes to verify cryptographically that this belongs to that specific entity. Assuming that we have a digital identity backed by public-private keys, we can establish this controlling identifiers mechanism between the blocks. So having one block, you can look it up and see who was the controlling identifier defined in the previous block, and if this block was allowed to be added but by that specific signature, right? So verifying the signature with the public keys, which you can find here, you can verify cryptographically the linking mechanism between that. And this way you're able to achieve this authenticity on any arbitrary data. And it doesn't have to be a linear chain of those blocks. It can be any form of DAG, which can shape a different complex structures, and the principles will be the same. Going further on, if you want to achieve this kind of veracity of the information, as I already mentioned, you go into the governance. So the governance, it can have stuff like duplicity detection, the schema, which is supposed to be used for this type of the data, the trust registry, like if this entity is allowed to issue this kind of data, or if they are allowed to overall act in that space, if they have a license or if they're some kind of authority and stuff like that. Stuff like glossaries, like what means if we call it that way, like what that is within that governance, right? And so all those rules which the governance are establishing, which can be applied directly to the data which are here. And now getting a little bit, let me see if I can, I don't have it here, maybe. Yeah, let's start with this one. So obviously the construct is very simple. I mean, it's a cryptographically linked data structure, nothing special about that. So what is the magic? Magic in that is that you can apply a different types of the payload, or some call it events, depending on the use case which you have. And we'll go through a few examples so you'll get the idea of what that could mean. By specification, or the way how we thought about that, is that each block is actually using steel instead of allowing to put any raw data or any arbitrary data into the block. The reason, there is a couple of reasons for that. I mean, seal is basically a digital identifier of the content which you want to put in, like a digest, right? So you basically calculate the digest, what you want to put in there. And based on that, you know that the digest is pretty much a predefined length. So you have an easy of control of the sizing of those blocks added to the microledger and how this provenance log will be built up. And then allows you to put 1 kilobyte of the information, but as well a terabyte of the data into it. And there is not much difference from the perspective of how you did with the overall data model or data structure. And the seal mechanism can anchor, which basically what it is, anchoring stuff in this microledger can anchor anything you like, schema, rules, data, timestamping authority, as here is an example. You could anchor any arbitrary code, which could be treated later on as a kind of smart contract execution for evaluating, for example, the state of that microledger for adding a new block. It could be anything which you would like to anchor within that block and make sure that it's an integral part of this microledger. The logic of that one is something which is not defined by us, but it's defined by a kind of SAP specification, which basically community will driven where that goes. And just to give you an example, like how, for example, digital identity can work based on this data provenance log. So carry, as it was defined, is this kind of, or key event log, which is part of the carry or the essence of the carry, is basically the data provenance log. It's basically this kind of microledger thing with a specific definition and characteristics of those objects. So in the carry, we have a couple of events. We have an interaction event, we have rotation event, we have delegation event. And those events are basically defined. If you will define them, that those, so as soon as you open up the seal and you will realize based on some prefix, which will tell you that this is the carry data provenance log, you know how to apply the business logic on top of that, how you treat the events and how or what kind of stuff you can do with them. But basically the structure is exactly the same. The implementation, the current implementation of the carry and, for example, carry ox is using this concept of the microledger of linking mechanism. The only assumption there is that it's a linear. So it cannot have forks or diverging from the main chain. And the reason for that is that we always are interested in the one state of the key, and there cannot be two of them. Otherwise, you're duplicit, and that doesn't work for the digital identity. But why we are allowing for the microledger any other arbitrary data structure there instead of just having main chain? Because, for example, if you look on the event sourcing, no, actually, event sourcing is a bad example. The git, so the versioning of the code, or any arbitrary data which you want to version or follow, you realize that the different version of the data could be same valuable for the audience or whoever received this microledger and anything else. So you could have a different variation of the same information provided through the same data provenance log that they forked and they coexist in the same way. This can be achieved in a different ways, having it in one structure or linking the mechanisms between the microledgers. But that's a kind of implementation details. And let's get back here. So I get how this is a bit slow. Okay, that's weird. I hope that they are not repeating the same thing what Facebook had a few days ago. That's super weird. But you can hear me, right?
Yep, we can.
Okay, so it's not internet issues. Okay, so let's try to I don't know why GitHub is down. Okay, interesting. So what I wanted to go with this one is that I need a picture. So basically, if you look on the data model, you'll be able to identify a couple of components, like a base component of this data structure. So first of all is the digital identifier. So the digital identifier is basically a digest of the things which we are putting in here. And obviously there is a different ways of implementing digital identifier. It could be multi-hash, it could be self-addressing identifier, it could be just simple MD5 if you like so, right? So working. And the assumption of this specification, which is under this GitHub link, it tries to provide just a data model without saying like how this implementation will be accomplished. It means that you define the implementation details of that identifier. If you will say that the digital identifier is a self-addressing identifier, you will follow the concept of this, what we have in Keri, where you have the prefix, which you can understand, you can use the prefix to understand the information which is encoded in that hash and know how to decode it and verify that actually this belongs to that specific content. Then you have, so obviously the previous ID is basically the same identifier, so it's a digital fingerprint as we call it. So the digital fingerprint of the block, then you have a digital fingerprint which we call seal of the content, which you are anchoring. Again, it's up to you how you implement it. It's basically, you could have, using a multi-format specs for that, you could use self-addressing identifiers or maybe CID from IPLD and, you know, other mechanisms is basically you choosing those components. And the next component is the controlling identifier. So basically the set of the keys or identifiers, which represents the keys, which allows you to verify the data structure, which is added later on. So who was allowed to add a next block? If you leave that empty, then obviously you do not have the authenticity in the block and you fall back to the nano ledger. And you have only integrity. To have authenticity, you need to have some kind of controlling mechanism and the digital signatures on those blocks. Otherwise, you can't talk about authenticity of those pieces. And the assumption is that this controlling identifier could be an implementation of, for example, that it has to be a DID. So if you have a DID, you do the resolution mechanism, you get the public key, and you verify who signed it. Obviously, you have a problem of that, like which key of that DID was used in case if you rotate it, right? So there is additional mechanism which needs to be implemented within that specific controlling identifier component to handle this kind of cases. So for example, from the Keri perspective, you have the whole key event log, which is resolved by looking on the identifier. And based on that, you can figure it out which key was used in connection with the transaction event log, but that's the specifics of that. You could think of it that this is just a list of the keys, standard PGP. You throw the public key there, and as soon as you have the microledger, you can verify those information right away because you're checking if this public key corresponds to the signature on the next block. So the important thing is to understand is that with this assumption, we're saying that you can't have authenticity of the data if you do not have integrity, and you can't talk about the governance if you do not have authentic and the integrity of the data and authenticity of the information. Because even if you have a governance which states about the rules, let's say a public announcements of the government in the context of the quarantine for the coronavirus, you get the information. If you cannot verify authenticity of that information, you have no idea if actually it was issued by the governance. Someone say so, but if you can trust him or not, that's a topic which you need to figure it out. If you can't verify integrity, that this is exactly the information which the government issued, you could expect that someone could modify those information on the way to you, and you can't say anything about that actually it came from that governance. So if you want to state about the veracity of the information, so if it's true or not, subject to true, of course, from the perspective of the governance, you need to have one by one, in that order, a proper implementation of the information to get to the proper state. And obviously we know that from the perspective of verifiable credential, for example, how the DID works in connection with the verifiable credential and building on top of that. But this mechanism allows you to get a solid, I would say, framework to play with if you are interested to have authentic data. And maybe one thing which I forgot to mention about the integrity of the data, if you look on that closer, you'll realize that we are talking about immutable data always, because otherwise you can't have a unique identifier linked with the content. And this is quite important because this addressed some of the problems which actually were raised 2 weeks ago about, for example, the semantic use in the verifiable credential and how I can trust that this semantic, the meaning of that semantic is the one which I'm expecting to get if it's pointing to a dynamic resource somewhere on the web. So playing within that game here, you always have to rely on the immutability of the data, because if you're doing any signature over anything, over any block, you can't make a commitment to something which could eventually change outside of your back, behind your back, outside of your control, right? So you can't commit to the data, which could be, for example, a URL to something, because you can't commit to the data behind that URL. You eventually can commit to the URL itself if that is for some reason value for you. So those base principles allows us to create this mechanism. And I'm trying to get back to this bag. Is it just for me that GitHub is down, or the whole world?
It might be just for you, which is super lucky.
It's fine.
Yeah, the same files are loading for me.
Okay. No idea. Okay. Because I wanted to refer to, there is a diagram in this spec. Let me think if I can pull it from somewhere else. Have it here. Anyway, maybe in the meantime, any questions or comments? And I will try to get this back other way.
So I'm having a hard time figuring out how this isn't just Scuttlebutt invented slowly. What code or what main functional difference do you see from taking this approach?
So basically what we are trying to do is to combine those. Like I said, this kind of concepts are available in a different, location. You can find the Scuttlebutt, it's one of the example. In Git, you have a pretty much the same structure. In event sourcing without the authenticity, quite often you're using those integrity checks and stuff like that. But the problem with all those implementations, they are missing some of the bits, depending on which one you're looking for. So for example, on Git, as you know, right now they are trying to figure it out how to overcome the problem of the lack of the agility of the linking mechanism, so that they are using SHA-1, they would like to move to SHA-2, and in the future probably to move to something much more reliable. And because of this is built into the system, there is no agility of those components. You can't easily swap that and still operate in the same realm. And what we are trying, what we try to do is to decouple all those essence, what is necessary, and make sure that those components are replaceable. So that if you, for example, want to rely on the AIDAS signatures, which is backed by the governance, fine, you're just replacing that component and everything else stays the same. So you have a general concept of dealing with any authentic data in any type of the use cases, assuming that this will increase the interoperability and introduce the high security of those concepts. Because what is the most important here is the security of those mechanisms and the way how they are composed together, so that you're following this kind of, reasoning. So that's the only difference. If you compare to those existing concepts, they are pretty much the same. It's just that for some implementation, they got stuck, for example, with the mechanism for the linking stuff, or how what kind of crypto they are using for linking those mechanisms in the context of authenticity of those blocks. But to get a generalized concept of that, we try to extract it and put that as a kind of, let's say, framework. If someone wished to build authentic data for whatever use cases, following those principles, he will be able to come up with something which is solid and will work in the long term.
This reminds me a ton of something that Daniel Hardman shared with me recently. He has a PR open on didcon.org for what he calls the gossip protocol. That has a defined protocol. I think it is a work in progress, but what I see in the repo that you've produced is all the concepts and sort of the description of the structure, but not actually any protocol. Will there be work to define a protocol for this, or how does that look like in the future?
So the idea of the transportation of that information over the wire or any kind of form of the communication, we were hoping that actually we'll leverage what we've already built around the DITCOM and actually this gossip protocol as well, which you mentioned, because how this information is transported, it actually doesn't matter. I mean, kind of matters, but it doesn't have any impact on that, how you structurize those information. So propagating that information, and we have one example which can't get GitHub open right now, but one of the example which we showed how this works with the ACDC within the supply chain, and maybe giving a couple of examples where and how this is useful, give you a better picture like why we are thinking that way. So if you think about the supply chain, and let's say you're buying a product which is produced in India, going through the Middle East and ending up in Europe, let's say in Germany, to you as a consumer buying, and you would like to verify all those information which is attached to that product, if it was Echo, if it was Bio, or whatever else, right? And obviously, right now, to figure it out, like those kind of information, you'll need to kind of connect to some kind of sources of those information and figure it out how to verify those pieces all together. So what could happen is that having this product, everyone appending information to the microledger, where this chain is passed through the chain altogether with the product itself. So imagine that you stick a piece of paper on the box which you're pushing through the chain, and each time when someone is doing something with it, adding an entry into it, like a blockchain, but one node blockchain which is carry on with the product, right? So this is the concept of the usage of the microledger in such a situation, that the producer can generate authentic data according his governance authorities and rules which are applying within his industry, can generate the data, pack it, and attached to the product. Then he passing it to the logistic company. The logistic company, let's say they need to use a cold chain, so they will attach the information about the measurement of the temperature over the course of the transportation time, right? So let's say that they are ending up in the Middle East somewhere in the warehouse. The warehouse, again, receiving those information can verify authenticity of those information, so they can verify that, okay, according to those standards and those governance, which is, you know, looking after this logistic chain, those guys will be able to verify that the temperature or the information which is included in those microledger blocks are authentic and they can trust it. So they can keep it storage in the warehouse as well, assuring about the low temperature during the waiting time for the shipping it to the Europe, and following that process up to the Europe in the customer, and customer at the end will receive this microledger, and he will be able to verify that all those pieces of information are linked together. There is integrity and authenticity in each of this piece. And now, depending on the governance rules and the authorities which are delegated or which the user can trust, he will be able to verify if any of those, for example, entities is not on some kind of blacklist, or if I don't know them, or like why they are actually part of it. It doesn't mean that I need to know all of them. It's good enough that I will trust the last one, because I'm assuming that if I'm trusting them, then we have this effect of the network of trust, and I don't need to look up the keys of the manufacturers of the product. But means that this information is very portable. There is no blockchain, there is no network to which I need to go to resolve those information. I can get it with me. And not only that, you can think of about the process of the after sales. Let's say that this product was a car, and I would like to sell that car to my neighbor. He don't need to go anywhere. He will get the microledger from me with the whole history of the product. And assuming that this information that he can trust me or some organization which verify those information, he receive all those information and he can resell that product as many times as he likes. And this information will be carried on through the whole process. So this shows you the idea how you can encapsulate those information in a very portable way and network agnostic. And this is what we are doing with Carry for digital identifiers, that if you don't like to be on that blockchain for whatever reasons, right, you can take your stuff and move to another blockchain and still continue working as nothing happened. This construct allows you to do stuff like that because you can verify authenticity of those pieces all together. And this is how you're anchoring those information around a specific, let's call it subject or whatever it is, identifier, data. It could be a book, a car, a product, whatever it is, whatever you're creating a data provenance log for.
Part of me feels like we're stretching the term authentic to the point where it's starting to snap. Part of what this is implying, and I think one of its strengths, is that the self-describing data gives you the continuity of the data, and that it points to who the manager of the data is without a blockchain resolution step. And then because it's self-describing, the offline value is still preserved, but you can find out what to do next. But when you just continue to use the word authentic data, I think some of the nuance of that is lost, and it makes it hard to follow kind of, because I mean, the point here is you have a pile of stuff and you can tell that it's all any tampering would be evident. And there's like three or four small concepts like that that you're adding together to try to get something much more powerful. But when you just say authentic, I don't know that we're hearing the kind of the core part of the use case.
So how you will define authentic? Like what it means authentic for you? If you're talking about authentic data, what that means?
Well, I guess you used authentic in five or six different places in your description. And I think you intended it for a different part of your use case each time is what I'm guessing at. And it feels like the overall construct of authentic data seems fine. Like I'm not arguing with the overall term. I'm just saying, as you mechanically walk through, here's why we chose to build it this way. You might want to choose different terms for the pieces you're talking about underneath.
Right. Because, I mean, what means authentic for us is that we can verify the origin of that information from where it's coming from. Because obviously nothing else you are able to do based on those cryptographical commitment with the digital signature, right? I mean, the only thing which you can say is that, yes, this identifier created it. What reason or if it was allowed or not, you don't know that. This is something which is part of the governance and the rules around the data and eventually the business processes around that. But the only thing what you can infer from those information is the responsibility of who created it. And this is something which is very valuable for the businesses from the perspective, for example, the supply chain, is that it's not that you have a transparency over the information. Obviously, yes, that as well. But the thing is that with this example of the cold chain is that if you get the product and it's damaged or it's not fresh, let's say, So you need to know who is responsible for the wasting of that product, right? So based on those information, you can figure it out in which part of the process the information actually appeared or where the information, so basically it's about the responsibility and traceability of that responsibility within the whole provenance log. So you can verify who is responsible for providing those information. If they are fake, because you can't say anything about the veracity of the information, if they are fake, you know to whom you need to go to claim the you know, the consequences or whatever use case you have. So that's only what we are trying to kind of explain with that, is that the authenticity, so integrity and authenticity, brings you to the level where you have a fully transparent log, provenance log of the information. You know from where they are originating, what are the sources of the information, and based on that, you can build up the governance and go towards this veracity where actually this is what it counts for the user. Can I trust this information? I know that this guy created it, fine, but is that really true? And this is normally evaluated based on some kind of reputation system and the kind of rules within the governance which you are operating. And I can't get the GitHub working. I have no clue what they blocked me or something. But anyway, what I wanted to add to this one from the perspective of the use case, because obviously this is just a data model. This is just a kind of framework within which we are operating. So ACDC, Authentic Chain Data Containers, is based on that, on those principles. This is how it's built, how you can chain the information all together. You can attach the, you know, data agreement into its schema, the rules, how the data can be used and so on. But everything relies on those two simple concepts, integrity and authenticity, because then you can infer that, okay, this guy created it, this guy stated it. So when you think about the kind of application of those stuff, so obviously identity, like identifier, the key state of the identifier is one of the predominant use case. And what we are trying to do right now is to, as we stated before, we're trying to take this concept and bring it to the different DID methods, which are, let's say, popular in use right now, to show them how they can enrich their functions based on these concepts to provide, for example, rotation mechanism or resolution of the public key based on the history of that key. So for example, if you're issuing 1 million credentials and suddenly you have to change your key, it doesn't mean that you have to revoke all those credentials. You're just saying that they are still valid because the key was compromised and everything what was created so far was created with the and not compromised key. And then the still people can verify those information by going through your identifier to the key event log and figure it out which key was used for my credential and still verify everything without worry about anything. You could do a delegation of those keys. You could delegate the access to another key or to other jurisdiction, let's say. Like you have a hierarchy structure within the organization where you have the boss and the, you know, the higher management, lower management, and some employees. You could have this delegation structure easily through this kind of provenance logs, knowing who and how relates to which identifier. Obviously, you could have a pre-rotation mechanism, as Gary introduced, that in case if you lose your key, lose your private key, you can do the rotation by through this pre-commitment to the new key in case if the old one is lost. And the one which we are working on is the simplest one, the DID web, which nobody likes because of the DNS. But it's the simplest one, which you could add this kind of construct and enriching by far security of that DID method. And you can apply that to any other DID method, that solved it, indie, whatever you choose. If you will follow those principles, you'll not only get those characteristics which I set, but as well possibility to move that identifier outside of that network. So suddenly you're realizing that you don't need the namespace anymore, because in many cases, you can take your identifier and without changing it, going to another network, which is completely elsewhere, or maybe it's not even following the same mechanism or the governance as the one before. And this is something which maybe you remember that I mentioned about this lack of interoperability, which was pointed out by Mozilla, which they actually stated that in a slightly different way. For me, interoperability of the DID method is not that they can talk each other. That's fine, cool. But interoperability in a sense that if I don't like this network anymore, I can take my staff packet and go to another sandbox. This is not existing as far as I know right now. And this is why we are so interested in the technology which we are working here, which Kelly introduced, because this is truly interoperable solution that no matter where you start, you can go and end up in a completely different ecosystem. In the supply chain, for example, this is a key aspect to go for any kind of blockchain solution, because this is a huge blocker that the jurisdiction of that network is not within the boundaries of, for example, one country. Because some countries require to have all the information only within the boundaries of the country. You can't just say that it's somewhere decentralized, right? You can't anchor something on the ledger in a different jurisdiction, because they will not allow simply for that. But they would love to have those principles. So with this one, you can start on indie network in India, move towards the centralized system, let's say in the Middle East, and move to the ADAS space, digital identity in Europe, and all that stuff will match and you'll have the highest security standards for all those pieces. And actually, we have already implementation of the code in Rust. It's called MicroLedger. It's on our GitHub. I'm sharing the link right now, which we are building towards what I said, to use it for the purpose of bridging existing DID methods and show what are the benefits behind that. We'll use the same implementation and mechanism to enrich the whole credential and the chaining mechanism. This is what is happening in the Trust over IP through the ACDC working group. I already proposed that actually this concept will eventually could replace ACDC as a whole, because it's just a generic concept of the chaining authentic data, which ACDC was aimed for, where the ACDC was focusing purely on the whole credential and this space, some kind of authorization authentication mechanism. This one is much more generic, and maybe it will be easier to get through as a specification, which is generic enough to talk about the base principles, and then how you implement it is obviously up to the community, and we don't need to, you know, fight against a DSPAC that everyone needs to follow, which is very close with some specific implementation, right? So you could, for example, define a DID spec in a way that it follows those principles of the key event logs, and then the rest is the details of the implementation. And you should be able to gain much more interoperable ecosystem than the current one, which we have with those 100 something DID methods, which some of them do not provide even the security mechanism which we could expect from the digital identity. Because that's something which people are looking after, how to use the DIDs for the digital identity, if it's a company or individual, it doesn't matter. So having those base ground, I think, could be very beneficial.
I would offer that a portion of the portability between DID methods is actually offered by the ability inside of DIDCOM, both V1 and V2, though the mechanisms are slightly different, to rotate a relationship from one DID to another DID. And so right. So that's part of it. It doesn't allow you to take any assets that happen to be on the ledger. So it depends if you're using something that is that nature or not. I'm totally behind the idea of a micro ledger and about being able to share it. What I'm lacking a little bit is the concepts totally make sense. Is this in progress, or do you consider this to be a complete work? Well, what's the state? No,
that's kind of just a proposition to start working on that. So this is what I mentioned about the crypto applied. We are preparing the work item for that group to actually start working on that. So define the rules of the data provenance and figure it out how this can be drafted, that it will be solid enough that we can, for example, push it to IETF as a spec or anywhere else, doesn't matter. But definitely this is just the beginning of the journey. This is why I wanted to share with you guys to figure it out, like if there are any kind of, like we miss maybe something important or something which basically doesn't make any sense, or it's definitely just a start.
So I've dropped a link in the chat that is the link to the gossip GOSSYP. He's named it work by Daniel Hardman. Mm-hmm. On the didcom.org repo is a defined didcom protocol. And so I like the concept of this work, although in practical sense, not having an implementation to be able to move it around really inhibits its adoption. And so I would encourage at least collaboration with Daniel on this concept, as it's the sort of the first attempt to define how sort of multi-party micro ledger synchronization might actually occur. I think it is good work. At this point, it's of course, you know, you mentioned this at the beginning, it's a little too abstract to be yet useful. But I think it's a really powerful thing. I think that it's getting really crisp about the definitions and the capabilities of it, and everything else will help us understand a little bit more detail around it. When you're describing concepts, it's easy to get tangled in words and precise definitions of things and everything else. I think, you know, as it gets more detailed, those will be easier to define. And that Nathan might alleviate some of your concerns, is that as it gets a little more detailed, those terms can carry more precise definitions, and then there's less of an issue of sort of tripping over the potential multiple applications of those words.
Yeah, I think that does get to some of my concern. A part of where I'm at looking at this is, it's saying if you add these several additional abstractions, you'll get to a place that is more interoperable. It feels a little bit like if you do everything the way I say, then of course you'll be interoperable with what I'm doing. And we need to turn that argument around a little bit and say, here's, if you just do these few things, you get a large amount of interoperability beyond what the work it takes to just do these couple of things. And I don't know if we've tightened up the examples enough to show how the additional layers of abstraction are helpful. I think for those of us who've been thinking about this for a while, we can see where you're going, but it's feeling a bit tedious, and I'm not sure how to get to where, you know, you could set someone down in front of a JSON structure and say, just add this and this and it'll all get better.
Yeah, completely agree. That I mean, definitely as soon as we'll have some first implementation. So what we are working on, as I mentioned, DAD web is one of the first shot. The second topic is the supply chain, the example which I mentioned. We partially implemented that using ACDC, and we will basically shape it by following those principles only. And the third one is using that concept to enrich Git, where you can have kind of IPR management and licensing management of the repositories as well, including controlling mechanism. So you could imagine that you can figure it out. It's not only that the integrity of the Git repository is in place, but you can verify authenticity of that information in there by verifying the signatures and all that stuff without having a centralized system like, for example, GitHub, with protecting the authorized access. You can pull the repository from someone and verify if you're allowed to add something or not. If you will do it or not, that's another kind of thing, if the software allows you. But if you will push it to someone else will be able to easily detect that you are not authorized person to add stuff to this microledger or to this Git and so on. And obviously the big one is the event sourcing, which has a certain application in a different enterprise ecosystems where they are really key on verifying authenticity of those information and making sure that they can create the responsibility of that what and when happened in their system. So the audit logs and stuff like that. Good. Any other questions or comments? If not, then thank you very much. And as I said, the currently the discussion is mostly ongoing in the Crypto Applied working group at DIF on this channel. On the Slack channel, obviously the human clauses element as well. If someone is interested to directly interact with those concepts through us, but we are aiming to get this working item and eventually think about combining the Kerry working group towards this common kind of specification of the crypto components which are necessary to build up authentic data economy with the digital identity, including all that stuff, in a right way. So we are looking forward for the results. And as soon as we'll have some implementation demo working on, then obviously I will be happy to share it here with you guys. Good. If there is nothing else, then thank you very much for your time and speak to you in a week.
Thanks.